When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
I knew.
It was Saturday.
I knew then. I hoped, I mean, you hoped what you felt wasn't true, you know.
And it.
But, and then when the Sunday came, I knew definitely it was.
I kept waiting for you to draw up in a text on the Saturday.
Never, she'd never ever go off in that say. Because it means she was caring and, you know, didn't know me. So they just know me and worried.
In July, police in Belfast find a young woman's body in a house in the south of the city. 23-year-old Maria McConnell had been brutally murdered. The grim discovery came after a 12-day search by the RUC and the media. After her death, Maria's parents spoke of a child who had suffered terribly from anxiety and depression. They found diaries and prayer journals she had written, which give a clear insight into her depression. At her funeral, Maria's cousin Conlis said, "The fact that she jotted down notes and prayers was, I believe, intended by God to be a means by which people, particularly young people suffering from depression, might learn."
Darkness creeps over my life. All seems to be lost. My happiness, my friends, my life. Beautiful memories feed me, keep me occupied. If only I could turn back to those lovely days. You live, you learn, you cry. Learning the hard way is my forte. Perhaps the best way. Help. Please help.
Maria grew up in Coolnessilla, a Catholic middle-class district of North Belfast. Her father, Frank, was a chemist. Her mother, Nuala, worked as a teacher at the local primary school. Her parents remember a happy, spirited child, blessed with an infectious smile and lustrous black hair.
I can see her skipping and running, just with her friends out in the street. And
very much a normal child.
She was a bit devilish, wasn't she? The deep fat fryer was on the floor in the kitchen, and I think she was only about 6 or 7 at the time, and she'd washed her hair in it. You know, I remember it dripping all over the place. Another time, she made candy apples, and there was candy everywhere on the floor. It was, and just wee tiny, tiny bits, and it was just everywhere, and the candy was stuck to the plates, the pots, the top of the oven, and it was just an absolute mess. And she just stood and smiled. What else did she do for it? She used to go to Irish dancing for a while, but she wasn't interested. All she was into was eating sweets. She went to go to the shop. There was a shop up there, so she went to the shop to get the sweets. She wasn't really interested in that. She enjoyed the piano. Now she was about 9 when she started it, and the lady who taught her was a lovely person, and her husband actually used to always say, "Who's that lovely girl with the beautiful smile?" And he always commented on that. And she always, every time she met us, nearly told us about that. Yeah. So she went to music for a few years until she was about 14. This is when things started to go wrong for her. I think she just didn't want to go anymore.
Maria's parents have very happy memories of her childhood, but she was being bullied at school. Her friend Marcella remembers the initial rejection and the bullying that followed.
People starting to turn against her, to make fun of her. That could be from the way she looked, in terms she always looked tidy and neat, looked after herself. You know, from a very young age, she just believed in looking her best. And a lot of people turned against her because of that and would call her names like, you look like a witch. Maria would do her nicely. She would set it the night before, put it in rollers, and then the next day it would be in ringlets. And it would look really pretty. She would apply her makeup beautifully to her face, which made it look very, very natural. And because of this, you know, people would, you know, poke jabs at her for no reason whatsoever. And I think maybe they knew that they were getting a reaction because she would become defensive and say, why are you saying that? Why? Then because of this, she became really self-conscious. And in the class, she became very withdrawn and into herself, to the point that if someone asked her a question in terms of a teacher, she wouldn't be able to answer. And I do know that now, looking back, that I'm sure the teachers viewed this as being, you know, just playing to fancy, and it wasn't. She just didn't have the confidence. She didn't know what. She just froze on the spot, and she couldn't budge, and she couldn't move, and just like fell to pieces in front of you. And because of that, people would, like, you know, she annoys me, she turns me. You know, the typical young, bitchy remarks that are made by girls, you know, in a school that we all experience and we all know of. And, you know, this just really affected Maria.
I remember crying that night, face to the mirror in my bedroom, feeling isolated, confused, hurt. It was the weekend, and at last I had escaped from the prison called school. Confined in those rooms 5 days per week was just too much. My sensitive disposition made it more painful, like sharp pieces of glass, the feeling of isolation. The insults stuck into my whole weekend. Jagged seemed my happiness. I withdrew into a world of despair.
Maria began dieting, and that led her to lose a lot of weight. And when she lost the weight, she then became very obsessed with maintaining that weight and became really almost petrified of gaining weight again. And she spoke to me that when she actually ate food, she could see almost like, you know, there was a bit more weight around her ankle, and she would measure it and say that her ankle would measure an inch wider than when before she ate. And she said no one else could see this, but she was completely clear in her own mind that she was not insane, that she was not seeing things, that she was experiencing this. But this really played on her mind, and it never left her mind. And she just constantly had the feeling that, you know, if she could control the way she looked physically, that her life would be so much better. Because that's what it ended up almost coming down to. You know, I've got to look good. I've got to look good. To feel good, I need to look good. She didn't think she was all that attractive at all. She used to talk about girls in school. Constant names would come up of the girls who were considered the most beautiful in the year group. And I plainly said to her, I said, you would leave them streets behind. And she would answer me on the phone, or even sitting in person, seriously, I don't believe you. It's me, no. It's me, you're beautiful. It's me, I don't know why you cannot say that. I don't know why when you look in the mirror you don't say it. It's me, you're gorgeous. It's me, if I was probably like a lot of people, it's me, I would be jealous too. It's me, but she never believed that she had the beauty or the impact that she did. I mean, you only had to look at her, and you the type of girl where you'd look and you'd look twice because she was so striking. And I think the fact that she wasn't aware of it made it all the more attractive.
She's written down somewhere that it was when she turned 13, but I wouldn't have put it as far back as that, because I have memories of lovely holidays we had. We went to Waterford, we went to a different place, and she seemed very happy then. But when she was about 14, she began to get a bit moody, mad-tempered, a bit cheeky at times. And she hadn't been like that, and we sort of couldn't understand. You know, it was only little flashes now and again. It wasn't too bad. But as the year progressed, I'd say when she was about 14 and a half, she began to get worse. I don't know if there were things, maybe she had disagreements with girls in school, and I'm not quite, if she did have, that might have been part of it. But also she got into trouble in school because she didn't have work in time and so on and so forth. And we were sent for because they couldn't understand what was wrong with her, because she was a bright girl. They knew she had ability, but she wasn't achieving.
She had been a very good student
in the first and second year. They couldn't understand what was happening. And I suppose at the time they thought there was maybe something going on at home that they didn't know about. And they were concerned. I mean, when say she got into trouble, her teachers were concerned about her. And each time we were sent for, it was the head of year and another teacher would have been there. And Maria was with us as well. And I'm quite positive. What was wrong with Maria was this illness was starting, and she didn't know what was wrong with her, because we weren't aware of there being anything wrong with her. And she just literally couldn't cope in school.
It all started 9 years ago. Back then I was young, free, live-wired and enthusiastic. I had nothing to worry about except whether it would rain at the weekends, whether Mum had ice cream in, or if God would get me the pet rabbit I always wanted. I suppose at the time, you know, with God being so majestic, I expected the rabbit to appear from a fluffy cloud. I just didn't appreciate those carefree days, the joy of childhood. And then my teenage years crept up on me. I turned 13, and the feelings of confusion took hold. Inadequacy, fear, self-consciousness, embarrassment. All these things were nipping at my unconscious mind.
She spent a lot of time doing art. And that was part of the problem. She used to spend time doing art and then turn pages out of the book because she considered it wasn't good enough. And she did this quite often. In fact, her art teacher gave off to her. You know, she said she'd start all over again. She spent so much time at art, which I think might have been an escape for her. I'm not too sure. Mm-hmm. But to the exclusion of other subjects, and that's what happened. She wasn't given enough time to her other subjects, and that's why she was getting into trouble. She was neglecting her other subjects. She would have maybe borrowed books. Some might be a lot of books in the house. But we knew that Maria would have maybe underlined things or highlighted things. She wasn't aware of the fact that she was destroying things, sort of thing, you know. And, well, I know her room was a mess, but I know that's typical of teenagers. And all I literally did was change the sheets, and her clothes were in a heap on the floor. Her desk was just a mass of... Look, I don't know how she managed to get any order out of it.
She would have written
on the wall, written things on the wall. She would have, if she was on the telephone, she used to write maybe a telephone number on the wall or write it on the actual phone itself. She actually wrote on the inside of the wardrobe door with black felt tip. She also wrote on the top of her chest of drawers about life. Life is terrible. Say something similar to that. I hate life. That's what she wrote. I hate life. I was shocked, and it disturbed me a bit. And I did. I just, why did you do that? Just because I felt like that. I'm sorry. And then I said, well, you just rub it off. You wash it off. And she did. She scrubbed it all off.
Maria gradually withdrew into a world of her own. Too frightened to leave the house, she spent most of her evenings writing in her diaries and prayer journals. Sometimes she managed to talk to her friends on the phone. Other times she flew into rages, retreated to her room for days at a time.
When Dirty, her friend, called up to the house, now she'd known Dirty since she started school, since she was 11 or 12, and she wouldn't talk. She wouldn't see Dirty. She said to Dirty, okay, I haven't got my makeup on. And she would just shout or talk down the stairs. They would have a conversation. Dirty would stand in the hall and Maria would talk down the stairs to her. And she says, the next time you come, I'll have my makeup on. She did this with a couple of friends. In fact, one of them said, "Off, Maria, for heaven's sake, you've known me all your life." She actually went through primary school with her. I don't care if you don't have makeup on. But of course, it wasn't because she had no makeup on. It was because she just couldn't couldn't come down and look at her eye to eye contact and talk to her. She felt so ill at ease and uncomfortable and panicky. She used to say, oh, I feel, she was sort of shaking.
As time went on, things got a lot worse.
Waiting at the airport with Mum and Dad, I tried to look calm and confident, keeping my fingers crossed, hoping there would be no one-to-one conversation. I just about managed a short, superficial conversation. Even that had me scared. I wanted to go home to a safe place for the painful thoughts to subside. I would love that to happen in a parallel world. It's not going to happen in this one. The lingering feeling of excitement and pleasant anticipation of nightlife, sun, sea and sand wasn't as gripping because of my messed up head. Why am I like this? I tried to reassure myself. I'm fine. I'm okay.
Whenever we left school, Maria seemed to basically never let the memories of school go. She always, like, even seemed to feed on them. And, like, they just constantly ran through her mind again and again and again. It went back to, you know, feeling lonely, feeling hurt, feeling that no one understood her, that people turned against her, that people made fun of her. People called, you know, her thunder thighs or fat or just didn't want to know her or associate themselves with her, etc.
Maria even had difficulty with her brothers. When they came into the house, Maria would stay upstairs. She would talk down to them all right, but she couldn't come down and, you know, speak to them because she said, "Mummy, I feel so ill at ease. I feel terrible. My hand's shaking. I just can't do it."
It was as if Maria, you know, she withdrew into a world of her own, which just, she was surrounded by memories of school, memories that, you know, taunted her, that hurt her, that she can never clear her system off fully, and memories that she grew to know were the reason why she deteriorated into the condition that she did. And, you know, as I said, her words were, they were the worst days of her life, and she would never, for all the money in the world, want to ever relive them, because it was just a really lonely period of time. Maria didn't leave her home for almost 2 years, and this is when she actually gradually declined. You know, after leaving school, just deteriorated right down where the point where she was afraid to go out the door, and it came to the point where she would tell me that she would shake, she would sweat, she felt weak, and she would get all these emotions at once of the possibility of her having to walk out the front door. When I called up to her house one time, when it came to me leaving the house, she crouched down at the door and just put her head around because she didn't want her neighbours to see her. It came to the point where she couldn't walk up the street, and she said to me on one occasion she had not been up the street in 2 years. 2 years she had not passed the door. She didn't have the courage to. She just felt that everybody, when she went outside the door, that everybody would be looking at her, pointing at her, laughing at her.
It was one day, Peter and John, they sort of, they would make their way up, say, "Maria, I'm going to come in." And she never said, "No, you can't come into the room." But when Peter went in once, it surprised him and shocked him. He said, "Mommy, I can't believe it. My own sister, and she couldn't look at me." She sat on the chair and looked at me through the mirror. And the whole time I was in the room, Mommy said, "That's the way we talked." Or she, and he said, "I can't, that's terrible, Mommy." He said, "I can't understand it." I said, "Oh, now, Peter, now you realise that Maria isn't well," because Peter and John both loved her, you know, and so on. But they thought that they didn't understand how ill Maria was. They thought maybe that we were just spoiling her, you know, and so she just smoked and we would have bought her cigarettes, and John was saying, "Peter, well, she'll never go out of the house. Just don't buy her cigarettes, and let her go up and get them for herself in the shop." But Maria couldn't. She was desperate to have a cigarette, but she couldn't have gone up to the shop to buy cigarettes for herself.
Maria completely felt trapped. within her mind and within herself. She was at the point where she didn't know sometimes how to help herself, because the memories, the thoughts were spinning around in her mind. She couldn't make sense of them, and my only point of contact basically came through to the telephone. At one stage, I couldn't go up to see her. She didn't want to see me. And when she would speak to me on the phone, she would maybe be really low and say that she couldn't help herself. She felt lost. She felt that she didn't know she had a purpose in life. She didn't know where her life was going to go, or how she could help herself.
Mary, I really need your help. I can't take much more of this. Irrational fear, distorted thoughts, complexes, phobias. Please help me, Mary, because I don't know what to do anymore. I am so tired of this. Why me? Am I just one of those people who will never be happy, never be emotionally fulfilled? What a joy it would be to sit in a room full of people and feel relaxed, confident, extroverted, to finally release all that Maria is. I do have so much to offer others. Love, concern, humour, bubbliness. The list goes on, Mary. It is hurting me so much, now more than ever, because at last you've given me the wisdom and the reason for living, the sense to unlock my self-absorbed, isolated being. Please, Sacred Heart and Mary, I beg you, help me to get my mind back, to get Maria back. You promise extraordinary graces to those who trust in your mercy. Well, I do, Mary. Always remember, I can only be the real me when I yield to you. Please give me the strength to do so forever.
Maria gradually began to turn to faith and to turn to praying to God to try to help her, because she was, I think, you know, at her wit's end.
She'd sit on the chair in the sitting room. Sometimes she'd sit there with no TV on, just sit there with her arms stretched along the radiator and her head down and her hair completely covering her face. And there were times I would have gone into the room to get something out, and she didn't look at me or move her head or look up. She just stayed like that. She used to sit with the chair facing the TV and sit sideways with her hair over her face, because she felt, apparently, that if she looked people straight in the eye, good eye contact, that they could read her thoughts, that they knew what she was thinking. And she worried about blushing, or she called it taking redness. She had very, very negative feelings about herself, very, very negative thoughts about herself all the time. And she felt that when people looked at her too, that they could saw her in a negative way. She said this quite often, any time we were out together.
Lord, help me to cultivate wisdom and to be worthy of it, to choose the right course, because I can't waste any more time. Help me to be the very, very best at what I do, to get my life back. I beg you, Lord. I just want to be happy and mature. I put all my hope in you. You who solve all problems, light all roads, so that I can attain my goal. You give me the divine grace to forgive and forget all evil against me, and in all instances in my life, you are with me. I want to thank you, Holy Spirit, for all things, and to confirm once again that I never want to be separated from you. I want to be with you in eternal glory.
In the early days when she started to stay in, people stopped me and asked, well, how's Maria? You know, just because they were the newer and were fond of her and all. I said, oh, she's taken a year out and so on and so forth. Well, after the first year out, you see, I said to Maria, well, what? She would sort of quiz me. If I went out, did you meet anybody? And I would say, yes, met so-and-so. Did they ask about me? And I would say, yes or no. I couldn't say no because, well, did they ask? Because she knew they would have asked about her, sort of thing, you know. I do a bit of teaching part-time. I know sometimes teaching the school that Maria went to. And I used to dread teachers who taught her, who knew her, asking me how she was, because it reached a stage and I didn't know what to tell them anymore. But there was one day, she'd quiz me when I went up to the school. She'd say, well, did so-and-so ask about me? Did so-and-so? And there was one day I said, yes, Mary did ask about you. And what did you tell her? I said, Maria, I told her the truth, that you're staying in the house and you're having difficulty going out and meeting people. And she got very angry. And she said, why did you tell her? I said, well, tell you why I told her, because when she asked me, it's just the way she looked at me. She said, how's Maria? And I said, Maria, I burst into tears in the front hall of the school. And that's how I happened to tell Maria. Well, that sort of, she got very quiet and she said, oh, Mummy, I'm so, I didn't realise that you felt that way, that it was so hard for you. And I said, well, it is hard, Marie. And I think she thought maybe that we didn't care about her at times and that we were hard. And she used to say to me, you don't understand what it's like. You have no idea what it's like. And in ways we didn't, but we did try to understand.
I'm so weak and afraid of straying. Help me to progress. I don't trust myself anymore. Please guide me. I want you to be my priority. Patience brings perseverance and then hope. I used to love you. What happened? I have strayed recently. I feel so angry and vulnerable and alone. I'm afraid it might happen again. I need consistency. I want to be a good person. Grant me purity to inspire and motivate me throughout the rest of my life.
There was sort of a tension in the house because, I mean, it's only to be expected when you're living at practice, it's saying is on top of each other for 4 years, almost 4 years. We felt we had to, our sort of, the highlight of our week was kind of a going to down to the local supermarket for a wee cup of tea or something like that, even if it was half an hour, just to be on our own, because, and to talk. But sometimes we felt very low ourselves. We knew Maria was ill, and at that stage, she didn't want anybody to know about it, and she said nobody could help her. And we knew there was help out there for her, and she just wouldn't agree to it. We were just very, very worried about her and what was going to happen to her and what would happen to her if anything happened to us. It was a great worry. And it was actually her friend. We met her friend one day and we told her how worried we were about her. Maria spoke to this particular friend, it's Marcella actually, a lot on the phone. And Marcella said, yes, Maria does need help. And I said, well, you know, Marcella, we can arrange for a nurse to come out and see so Maria can talk to her and maybe that would help her. And I said, but no matter what we say, Maria just says, there's nobody out there can help me. Nobody. And anyway, to cut a long story short, Marcella actually suggested to her that a nurse could come out. And just like that, Maria said, yes, okay then. And then her nurse Pauline came out. And she eventually, after a short while, Maria agreed to actually had an eating disorder. And an appointment was made for her to go and see a doctor in the eating disorder clinic. And she attended there for a while. After the first visit, she didn't make any attempt to make her smarten herself up, if you like. But then gradually she began to put on a bit of makeup, and she went actually went with me and with Frank, and we got new clothes for her. And she then started actually going out for a while. But then it reached the stage when she thought that she was going out, she didn't need any more help. And she more or less just didn't attend her appointments and didn't keep her appointments. She was fine for a little while. She went out all right. But then she went into town one day, and I think she had what was what you would call a panic attack. When she went on the medication, she improved. And one day she came into the living room. Now, she didn't spend all the time up in her room. She spent a lot of time in the sitting room. She would have watched TV, and she loved Father Ted, would have put videos of his on, and so on. She never ate with us. She didn't have a meal with us for about 5 or 6 years. And she admitted to me one day, like in recent months, the reason she couldn't was because she felt uncomfortable with us. I said, "Bernie, how can you feel uncomfortable with us?" And she said, "Well, I am improving." She says, did not notice that I come into the living room more now?" And I said, "Yes." And but she couldn't really, she didn't have a sit down and eat with anybody. She might have sat recently in the corner in the living room with a plate on her knee, but she couldn't sit down at a table with us.
I'm becoming antagonistic, holding grudges. I'm turning into quite a cold, selfish person. People just seem to annoy me more than ever. I want to lash out, and it worries me. I don't know who I am anymore. Can you help me to see things from your perspective, Lord? I have so many problems at the moment. Why can't you answer me? Please. I'm so fed up. I need confidence. Do I have a guardian angel? If so, I suppose I'll have to thank you every time I come across a feather.
Well, then it reached the stage when she... There used to be, when I say rows, she used to say, give off to us, you leave me alone, there's nobody can help me. And I kept, I'm like, please, look, Pauline, you get on well with Pauline before she... I can arrange for her to come out again. Well, she said no, and this was very frustrating for us. And, you know, we were very worried because I could see she was getting worse. So eventually, actually, out of the blue, Pauline rang one day, and Maria, I think, had reached Pauline and said, "Would you like me to come out and see you?" And she agreed. Pauline did come out and talked with her. Now, at that stage, again, she was sitting sideways, not able to look at Pauline, hair over her face and so on. I don't think she ever looked at Pauline straight in the eye. But Pauline arranged for a doctor to come out and see her, and he sort of assessed her, and he said she suffered from severe social phobia, and he started her medication. Just little doses at the beginning, and then, you know, the dosage was increased after a while. And the medication certainly seemed to help her. Now, at first she was impatient. She said, "Well, these things are not doing me anyway. I'm going to stop taking them." I said, "Look, you've been told, Maria, it's going to take time. It might even take 2 or 3 months." So I just put her tablets out every morning. And some mornings she wouldn't maybe take them till the evening time. And but as time went on, she did improve. And she began to look forward, talk not so much about her past, about school days and who said this to her and who didn't say that to her. She stopped talking so much about the past, and she started talking more about what she was going to do in the future.
She felt that God was responding to her prayers, because over that period of time she gradually did get better. You know, her moods lifted, she gained, I wouldn't say confidence, but she was starting to... you know, and brighten up, just to slowly get better. She would pray for everything. You wouldn't believe it. She used to pray to God to make her breast grow.
Maria's sense of humour is evident in her diaries. Periods of gloom give way to light-hearted musings. She had an ability to poke fun at herself and her insecurities.
Her humour was her outlet. in the sense she had a completely wonderful, bubbly personality. She was very infectiously funny. She would have me literally crying on the phone with laughter. And even through all the downsides, she would be able to, you know, make a joke of it or laugh and go, you know, oh, well. When I rang one time and she said, I said, Mr. McConnell, is Maria there? And she's come on the phone. She was, okay, you know, like I just ran up the street, so I didn't come back down, just ran up to the shop and chatting past the door like in 2 years and would laugh about it. A complete sense of the absurd, totally. She would take an idea and you would blow it out of all proportions into, like you say, an absurd situation where just it's totally unbelievable. And like I say, we'd just be rolling in laughter. And, you know, that's one of the things that, you know, I dearly miss. Not being able to lift the phone anymore and go, hi, how are you, honey? And just roll with it. Like, we would spend hours on the phone, sometimes not talking about, you know, maybe she was feeling low or she wasn't at her best. Hours on the phone, having a laugh and giggling and, you know, just being, you know, the way we always were with each other.
Maria was happiest, if you like, when she was playing music, listening to music, and especially dancing to music. In fact, she ruined two rugs that I had in my sitting room. They were pale in colour. And I sort of thought, God, that's awful dirty looking. And I looked down, and she actually laughed at me. I said, what are you down there looking at that for? I said, were you dancing on that? She said, yes. So then she said, well, I won't do it again. And then I discovered one day, what she was doing instead, she lifted the rug up, was dancing in the carpet, and it was going a bit, you know, threadbare. I said, oh, look, why don't you dance out in the garage? But no, that wouldn't do. It wasn't comfortable enough, you see. So let's say she ruined two rugs, and then I eventually ended up getting a one that was dark in colour and pattern. And I said, well, just go easy on it. And, you know, at least it's dark and you won't notice it so much. So, but she used to pull the blinds down, and she just she let herself go. And she was a great mover. And she actually one time too, she had a thing about river dance. She was used to play the tape over and over, and she used to do dance to it as well. She used to go out into the kitchen and all and dance to it. But it gave her a great buzz, if you like. And when she went out with Dirty, you know, it was for the dancing that she went. She just loved dancing.
What is your will for me, God? You've no idea how frantic I'm getting. I don't want to lose you. I'm getting scared. I'm still a bit vain. Could you please guide me on how to forget about these things and not let them annoy me? This darkness has been smothering me for 2.5 flipping years. It's not flipping fair. I'm past myself. Please help. If you want to be friends, God, try being a good friend yourself. Amen.
I think Maria craved and was desperate for physical love, you know, and physical affection. She just wanted to be loved by people and by someone close. She had her parents, but that wasn't enough for her. And like all of us, we need someone to love.
God, I feel so uncomfortable with you. I feel so angry with you. I'm so worried about blaspheming you. I'm scared of you. Never go away. Just remember I need you. Want you forever. Sealed with 9 kisses. Mary, am I doing something wrong? Mary, please pray for me. I'm so afraid and I need your help. Amen. P.S. Sorry, Mary.
Maria was, I think, trying to find out who she was as a person. And I think this is why she was starting to explore in terms of her sexuality. And I think the bottom of it was that Maria was very naive in the terms of being a big kid and a very trusting person and would not suspect that anyone would do her any harm or any injustice, or that someone, that something like that could happen to her.
I am starting to grasp the real meaning of life. Love. I never really understood. treasured this most beautiful gift we each and every person can reach for in ourselves. Life should be a celebration of love to be transmitted to each and every creature. I have no words to explain this powerful emotion. All I can say is it sustains me, makes me totally fulfilled, happier. Love conquers all. Love is a simple reflection of God. All the hurtful things, trials and tribulations we suffer as a consequence of other people's indifference should be transmuted into understanding, forgiveness, because that's what love is. Each person has the capacity to reach for the deep and full love our Creator is. Don't reject it. It is our destiny.
She said, "Marcel, honey, would you like to go out to a club?" And I said, "Maria, no." Because I didn't drink, so I wasn't into clubs, as Maria knew, but I just think she just wanted someone to go with her. I said, "Maria, honey, no, I'm too tired." And I was meant to be meeting Maria the very next day because I hadn't seen her in such a long time. And we were both excited about seeing each other. And I said, "Listen, honey, go to bed and I will see you tomorrow. I'll give you a call from the town after I see Anne in my charity and I'll meet you." And she said, "Oh, listen, what if I pay?" I was like, "No, you're not working, you've no money." She was, "What if I get the taxes?" Like, "No," and putting all these incentives, you know, over the phone for me to go. I said, "Honey, I was just flaked out. I was too tired." And she said, "Me, just go to bed and get a good night's sleep, honey, and I'll see you tomorrow." And she said, "Okay." And just that was it. She was, "Okay, honey, I'll see you tomorrow. It's me, night, night. Love you. Bye-bye."
Maria went out on her own that night. Her mother remembers her singing and dancing as she waited for the taxi. She never saw her again. On the morning of Maria's funeral, a woman came up to Nuala and handed her a prayer. It was, she told her, a picture from the Lord.
"The Lord gave me this picture very clearly, of a young girl between the age of 20 and 25 with long dark hair. She was wearing a light-coloured blouse and what seemed to me to be a cream body warmer, also a blue flowing skirt. This girl was moving in such a way that I would call dancing, with her arms outstretched and her head held high with such a beautiful smiling expression. She was moving down an embankment. I could see her dancing down this embankment. I would say she was waltzing. She was so happy, smiling such a beautiful smile. I felt the Lord was saying to this girl these words, 'You're not alone, you're my child.'"